Good morning. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. The next case on our calendar today is A20-1207, William O. Bradley versus Cody J. Haislett. This oral argument is being held on the Zoom platform today in accordance with pandemic-related court orders. The same procedural rules apply to this Zoom oral argument as apply to our in-person oral argument. Counsel will each have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. As you can see, the marshal will be keeping time with an electronic clock in the grid view. And if there are any technical issues during this oral argument, I'll ask the marshal to stop the clock, but hopefully we will not encounter any technical issues. So, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready, and I'll ask that you introduce yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John Jagila, and I represent the appellant, who was the plaintiff in the district court case, William O. Bradley. This is a case about a homeowner who has an express written appurtenant easement to drive back and forth to his house, and a decision by the court which decided that he is only able to use less than one half of that easement. Now, the district court held in its conclusions of law that Mr. Bradley owns an easement for ingress and egress purposes over tract J, which is the easement tract, and he is entitled to the full use and enjoyment of that easement. And that's in the addendum on page 13. Now the respondents, the Haislets, they own the land that is subject to the easement and it's burdened by the easement over tract J. The holding of the court is consistent with the Minnesota Supreme Court decisions in Highway 7 Embers and Minneapolis Athletic Club, which are sort of the controlling decisions with respect to interference with the easement. But after stating the law correctly about the full use and enjoyment and citing the relevant Minnesota Supreme Court cases, then the court takes this sharp left turn and decides that the respondents have the right to block more than one half of this easement with permanent obstructions. And that is why this case is appealed to the Minnesota, to the Court of Appeals. There are no Minnesota decisions that allow the servient property owner, which owns the property burdened by the easement, to block an easement. And even in the Minneapolis Athletic Club, there was an easement that ran between the old athletic club and the Minneapolis club, and it was a roadway for access going back and forth. They allowed a skyway 24 feet above the easement. I mean, the surface of the easement, but they didn't allow the owner of the property to actually block the easement and prevent the easement holder from using it. So there's really no case in Minnesota.
Counsel, you seem to rely predominantly on that Minneapolis Athletic Club case, and as well as the Highway 7 Embers case that you mentioned. And on page 48 of your brief, you say that the easement by definition does not allow the owner of the servient property to appropriate a part of the easement for the servient property owner's exclusive use by blocking or obstructing part of that easement. And then you cite the Minneapolis Athletic Club case. But I didn't see where how the Minneapolis Athletic Club case supports that assertion in your brief or that characterization of the case. Can you cite me to the language in the case that you're relying on? Because that case, as you mentioned, deals with, you know, a walkway above ground, not the use of the ground itself. So I'm trying to understand how that case is relevant to the issues in this case.
Well, I think the case cites the general proposition that the owner of the servient property cannot interfere with the full use and enjoyment by the holder of the easement. It doesn't specifically involve the same facts.
Where does it talk about exclusive use? I didn't see that language in the case.
Well, it doesn't talk about exclusive use from the standpoint that the owner of the property cannot also use the property. That's always the case. And so in that Minneapolis Athletic Club, the owner of that property that was subject to the easement, he could also use that roadway to drive back and forth. But what it does say is that you can't interfere with the full use and enjoyment of the easement. And so when you talk about exclusive use, you have to distinguish between two parties using the easement for road purposes and one party using the easement to plant a tree, build a wall, put a lawn on the easement, and by doing that, appropriate for the exclusive use of the owner of the property and block the easement holder from using that part of the property at all. There are a couple of cases that the Court of Appeals has decided recently that involve this issue, and they may be a little bit more informative in terms of how the parties are entitled to use the property. One is the Anthoskalopoulos case, which was decided in 2018, and then there was a Dunkley case decided in 2020. And both those cases involved an easement for roadway purposes. In the one case, the owner of the land had grown a lawn that encroached onto the roadway by about 4 feet. And so to that extent, he was using that easement for lawn purposes. The court said, well, we're not going to make him remove the lawn, but the lawn isn't inconsistent with somebody driving across it if they decided to do that. And the Court of Appeals said, it may be that the owner of that property who's encroaching on the roadway, they may have to replace that lawn periodically because it's not really a drivable surface. And then in the Dunkley case, they also said that the owner of the property could use that property for an alternative driveway, but that alternative driveway didn't block the use of the holder of the easement. And so therefore it wasn't inconsistent with the full use and enjoyment of the easement by the easement holder. If you look at page 8 of our brief and page 20 of the addendum, it shows the registered land survey, which gives the meets and bounds of the easement, 22 feet by 192 feet. And then on page 23 of the addendum, it has the actual easement. And you can see from both those exhibits that the easement is pretty clear and unambiguous. Mr. Bradley has a easement for roadway purposes. It's 22 feet by 192 feet, and he's entitled to the full use and enjoyment. And then if you look at page 11 of the brief or page 39 of the addendum, you can see that there's some survey drawings that were done by Gronberg and Associates, and it shows all the permanent obstructions that are being maintained by the respondents that block Mr. Bradley's full use and enjoyment of his easement. The obstructions on the southern part of it block almost all the easement except for 5 or 6 feet. And on the northern part, they block everything except for maybe about 14 feet. So about half the square footage of the easement is blocked by all these permanent obstructions. When Mr. Bradley bought his property 46 years ago, he did buy the easement. It came with the property and runs with the land. That easement was entered into by a prior homeowner who had actually signed a contract to purchase the property. They were at the closing, and his attorney told him that he didn't have any legal right to get back and forth to his house. And so the Helmstetter was the party in question at that time. He said, I'm not going to close on this property unless I get an easement. And so the owners of the land on the west side of Underhill Circle that could give him an easement so he could travel back and forth, they entered into that easement. One of the parties to that easement is Roger Patch. He's the person that platted the land and put together Registered Land Survey 765. And anecdotally, he's the grandfather of the Hazlets, who are the respondents in this particular case. So the easement that was granted to Helmstetter and runs with the land, that's a valid and binding contract. And he paid consideration for that contract. And it's clear and unambiguous that he has the right to a 22 foot by 192 length easement over Track J, which is basically the entirety of Track J. Minnesota courts have held, Motorsports Racing Plus is one case, that a court doesn't have any legal or equitable right to modify or change a contract. So the question in this case is, the court said, yes, we agree. Mr. Bradley has an easement. It's clear and unambiguous. It's over the entirety of Track J. However, the owners of that property have the right to block half of that easement, so he can't use it unless he's going to drive over their tree and drive over their wall. And that doesn't constitute a modification or a change of the easement by the court. And so that just seems to be sort of smoke and mirrors. If you have an easement and somebody blocks half of it and you can't use it, then there's no question that that easement has been changed or modified. And as I said before, there are no cases, including these recent cases decided by the Court of Appeals in 2018 and 2020. There are no Minnesota cases, and for that matter, there aren't any cases outside of Minnesota, which say that because the holder of the easement has to share the use with the owner of the land, which is true. Mr. Bradley doesn't have exclusive use of that easement. The Hazlets, who are the respondents, they can use the easement also. But what they can't do is they can't block half of it and in effect appropriate half of that easement for their exclusive use to the exclusion of Mr. Bradley. And that's what's happened in this particular case. So what we're asking the Court of Appeals to do is we're asking the Court of Appeals to reverse that part of the district court's decision where they say, where the district court says Mr. Bradley's got the full use and enjoyment of the easement, but it's okay if the landholder blocks half that easement. So now Mr. Bradley doesn't have the full use and enjoyment of the easement. We also think that it would have been good, which the court denied our request, it would have been good to either have expert testimony on a Track K, which is adjacent to the east of this Track J, which Mr. Bradley has an easement over. He doesn't have an easement over Track K, but it would have been good to have expert testimony which said he doesn't have an easement over Track K and he has no legal right to travel on that. Because there was a lot of testimony and even there were a lot of comments by the district court judge. And in the post-trial motions, in the transcript, you can see the district court judge said, well, I would have decided this case differently if Mr. Bradley couldn't travel over Track K. And Mr. Bradley acknowledged that he has traveled over Track K, which is the land owned by Mr. Larson, and nobody's tried to stop him. But the judge said, if it turns out that he's blocked from using Track K, which he's not legally entitled to use, then I would have decided it different. And Mr. Bradley does have the right to use all of Track J. And so we would then have to allow him to use Track J. And so I think because there's been confusion as to what Mr. Bradley's legal rights are to use Track K, it would have been good to have expert testimony, which would say that that property is Torrens property, Torrens title, and there are no easements in favor of Mr. Bradley that are memorialized on that Torrens title. And if that's the case, under the Torrens title laws, he doesn't have any legal rights to travel over that property.
Counsel, with regard two of the, what I think you term obstructions in the easement, the retaining wall and the first tree, would you agree that those were addressed in a prior litigation? Between, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, there was prior litigation.
And so how did the district court err in declining to reconsider that prior determination?
Well, the prior determination was based on an erroneous conclusion that Mr. Bradley had an easement over Track K.
Well, but that's a legal argument about the underlying decision. My question for you is, why wouldn't collateral estoppel or res judicata apply to bar reconsideration of the issues in that case?
Res judicata and collateral estoppel don't apply for a number of different reasons, and we set that out in our brief. But the Kellys, in that particular case, they filed bankruptcy. So during the pendency of the appeal, we wouldn't be able to proceed against them. Once they filed bankruptcy, you had to then start an adversary proceeding in the bankruptcy court, which we did. And then in that adversary proceeding, the court decided that because they chopped out the road and did some other things, and they didn't have malicious intent, which is a bankruptcy standard, that they weren't required then to follow the court order. In that proceeding subsequent, Judge Vasily was a presiding judge in that case, and she said in her opinion that the Hazlets weren't required to follow any of the orders of the district court because that decision didn't bind the Hazlets. And the Hazlets argued that they weren't bound by the Abrams decision. And then Judge Vasily said, if Mr. Bradley wants the Hazlets to do something with respect to the maintenance of the permanent obstructions, he has to bring a separate litigation. And that's in her opinion in that particular case. So we'd also
thank you. Your time is up. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Brennan, you can proceed when you're ready for respondent.
Thank you, Judge. Sid Brennan, and I represent the respondents, Cody and Brady Hazlett, in this matter. Can you hear me okay, Judge?
I can, thank you.
Sure. We're before your honors, obviously, on an appeal of a case that's been tried twice by Attorney Jagila. The first time was against the Kellys, who were the predecessors in title to the same property. As the court has noted, we had the same issues, just different owners in the second case. Mr. Jagila has had the ability to go two bites out of the apple, so to speak, because he's tried the same case twice. But you're correct in your review that these permanent obstructions, namely the wall, the tree, the sod, and the asphalt and the grass that was on the asphalt were all there before. They were affirmed in effect by Judge Abrams in his decision in this case. And Judge Wall said you don't get to have two different judges decide the same case. So that's why he basically deferred to what Judge Abrams did and said these are the permanent obstructions they state.
Can you address,
Mr. Brennan?
I'm sorry. Yep.
I was going to ask the same question.
Yeah, maybe so, probably so. Can you address Mr. Jagila's argument with regard to how intervening bankruptcy proceeding affects the res judicata or collateral estoppel analysis?
The bankruptcy proceeding, Judge Ross, was with respect to the dollar amount because he was granted a judgment for damages and he cannot collect that because of the bankruptcy. But it would not have stopped him from bringing a motion to lift the stay so that he could have furthered his appeal. But in fact, he did appeal in 2013 to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals affirmed the decision, except in that case, Mr. Jagila did not argue about these permanent obstructions. So he's had this same case before this court, the Court of Appeals, twice.
Mr. Brennan, can you also address Judge Vasley's the statement in the order from Judge Vasley that Fannie Mae and the Hazlets and all future owners are not bound by the litigation between Mr. Bradley and the Kellys?
And what Judge Vasley had was a reference from the title examiner's office, I believe, for a proceeding subsequent where they were trying to clean up the title to this particular piece of property and remove the notations of the bankruptcy. And what Judge Vasley said is that the Hazlets were not bound by anything that was done in that proceeding because they were not a party to this. But it did not state that the Kellys were not bound by this. And the Bradleys were not bound by this because they were, in fact, parties. Bradley sued Kelly. So he would have been, you know, counsel argues that it's not res judicata and collateral estoppel are not applied because, you know, his client wasn't a party, but his client was a party and it's the exact same facts and the exact same issues. So it does, he doesn't get two bites out of the apple. The permanent instructions stay and he can't have them removed. And that's what really what he wants done in this case is to change the decision of Judge Abrams, which was basically consented to by Judge Wall and affirmed by the Court of Appeals in the prior case where he didn't argue it. You don't get to try the same thing twice and raise, you know, the same issue in the hope that you can get a different result. It's just like the question on getting an expert opinion on the title examiner, having that before the court. Well, in permanent instruction can take place on both abstract and Torrance property. So having the expert opinion on Torrance isn't going to make any difference because the obstruction is the obstruction. You don't need somebody to, it's not a different law applicable to the type of property that it is. And that's all we're litigating here are three permanent obstructions, which he lost. The court doesn't really even have to deal with the easement over track K to decide the issues before this court, but it should be noted that this is the easement consists of a 44-foot strip of land. If you take a look at the diagram on page 11 in the appellant's brief, you'll see that there's really only one section of that property that's down to about 11.3 feet at the narrowest point. A car is 8 feet. The people have driven in and out of this road since 1982 when it was repaved in its existing configuration as shown on the diagram on page 11. There's been no interference with Mr. Bradley's right to access his property. He has ingress on the right side of the road on J. He has egress on the left side of the road on K on the right side, J on the left side when he goes out. People drive on the right side of the road. This 44-foot strip of land in this private cul-de-sac for this easement is wider than Highway 12, old Highway 12, which goes through the middle of Long Lake. A car's 8 feet wide. You don't need any more land to get in and out. He talks about a tree and it's narrowed down to 5 feet, but the canopy of the tree, the outer branches are where he comes to a 5 foot limit. The actual tree is closer to 10 feet over the trunk of the tree. And there, we even have one of the exhibits shows a Chevrolet Suburban parked under the tree.
It's plausible, of course, that some vehicles could pass, but you aren't arguing that all vehicles could pass. For example, if there's construction on the property, there you need larger vehicles to come through, vehicles with a larger profile than the branch would permit.
But see, Judge, there's 5 feet to the branches plus the other, at that point of the diagram, it's almost 20 feet on the other side. So it's been that way since 82. Nobody drives under that tree to get in and out. It's way off the side. But I'm saying it's been that way since the road was installed on the private cul-de-sac way back when. Mr. Bradley even participated in the repavement in 1982. And there's a same 44-foot strip in front of his property, but his is only paved to about 17 feet. It's a small little cul-de-sac that goes up at the top of the hill for the property in the back. Nobody uses that. And the large trucks that go in and out, we've got photographs that were exhibits of the UPS truck. Any other big truck that goes in and out has no problem accessing any of the properties on the cul-de-sac. It's never been an issue. No one's ever objected until the property was at one time, the Kellys, the prior owners, started to remove some of the asphalt, and then somebody did a survey and found out where the road actually was. And that's when Mr. Bradley objected, when he understood he had the right to drive within about 5 feet of my client's front door. He's even argued that the front door of the house when it was originally built was put on another side of the house, which is not true, and there's no evidence to support that. Well, we believe, Judge, that the case has been decided and we're dealing only with the permanent obstructions, which the court has already determined stay. So there's no point in reversing this and sending back, and there's no point in needing any expert testimony on Torrance property because the same permanent obstruction that applies to Torrance applies to abstract property. And if Mr. Jagila wanted an expert opinion, he could have called somebody at trial to talk about Torrance. He seems to think that somehow Judge Wall is confused that you can't have a permanent obstruction on Torrance property, but it's there, same as if it was abstract property. I don't believe I have anything further right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Any rebuttal for appellant?
Yes, Your Honor. The last comment by Mr. Brennan that we could have called an expert is a little bit disingenuous because we had an expert that was listed on our witness list. The judge told us he wasn't going to hear any expert testimony. He didn't need to hear any expert testimony. And we made a motion to have an expert, and he denied the motion. So to say that we could have called the expert is not accurate. All of the other comments of Mr. Brennan is sort of indicative of how this whole case went. There's all this confusion about Track K. Judge Abrams said Mr. Bradley had an easement over Track K. He doesn't have an easement. The judge was a little confused as to whether or not Mr. Bradley had an easement over Track K, but he finally resolved it in his own mind when he wrote the opinion by saying, I don't know of anything that stops Mr. Bradley from traveling over Track K. The bottom line is Mr. Bradley doesn't have a legal right over Track K. The Helmstetter attorney, he was the person that told Helmstetter, look, you don't have any legal right to get back and forth to Highway 12, so you better get an easement. Otherwise, you're going to be using a boat to get to your property. And so he went to Roger Patch, who laid out the whole 765 and said, I'm not buying that property unless I get an easement. And they granted him an easement. So that's evidence of the fact that he needed that easement to have a legal right to go back and forth to his property. And then Susan Ledre, who's with the Hennepin County Title Examiner's Office, Mr. Brennan asked her for an informal opinion as to whether or not Mr. Bradley had an easement over Track K. And she came back and said, there's no documentation that I can find in the file that would support an easement over Track K in favor of Mr. Bradley's property. So that's the problem with this case, because the judge said, when we had our post-trial motions, he said, I don't see anything that prevents Bradley from traveling back and forth over Track K. And as Mr. Brennan said, if Mr. Bradley had an easement over Track K, then you could make an argument that, okay, he's got sufficient space to get back and forth. Why does he have to use all of Track J? But that would be inconsistent with case law, in Minnesota, which says if you have two easements, you're entitled to use both of them. Just because you have an easement on one piece of property doesn't mean the other landowner, the Hazlets in this case, can appropriate all that land for their use. And in the post-trial transcript at page 10, the court said that if there was some proof that Mr. Bradley couldn't travel over back and forth over track K, even though he doesn't have a legal right. So what the judge was saying is if the neighbor came out there and put up a blockade and said, okay, Mr. Bradley, you're not traveling on my land anymore. He said, then under those circumstances, the court would have to make sure that Mr. Bradley could drive back and forth over track J, and the respondents would be having a problem having the appellant drive close to their house. So what the judge was saying is that as long as Mr. Bradley's driving back and forth on track K, I don't see any reason to give him the full use and enjoyment of track J. But the problem Mr. Bradley has is that when he sells his house, he's going to have the same problem that Helmstetter had. He's going to have to explain to the owner, to the buyer of that house, that a court has modified his easement. And so he doesn't have the full use and benefit of that easement. And if, in fact, somebody takes away this new homeowner's right to travel over track K, then this homeowner is going to have a problem. And when Mr. Bradley bought the house, he was represented by Crosby from Fager and Benson. And Crosby said, you don't have to worry about the fact you don't have a legal right over track K. You have a legal right to go over track J. Helmstetter got this easement to do that. And so you don't have a problem. So if the Court of Appeals allows the Hazlets to block more than 50% of this easement, they'll be changing the law in Minnesota. And anybody that's got a property that's subject to an easement, they'll come into court and they'll say, well, the person that has the easement doesn't have to use all this because he's got a way to get back and forth to his property on another road. And so therefore we can take away part of his easement. And that's not the law in Minnesota.
I need to unmute. Thank you very much, both of you, for your arguments and your thorough briefs. The case is now submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory timeframe.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you.